Well, hi, neighbors. Tonight we've chosen some of the songs that we sing and play on our dances across the country. Songs that reflect the emotion of the people that live in the nightlife. Song of happiness, sadness, heartbreak. Songs of the nightlife. Now, we hope that you enjoy yourself tonight as you listen to our latest one. We hope you like it. It's a little different from what we normally do. But we hope it'll be pleasing to you. And we hope that you can just kind of sit back, kick off your shoes, relax just a little bit, and listen to our latest song. And if you like it, tell us about it, won't you? We'll try to do more things for you. Thank you.
Why is marijuana not legal? Why is marijuana not legal? It's a natural plant that grows in the dirt. You know what's not natural? 80-year-old dudes with hard-ons. That's not natural, but we got pills for that. We're dedicating all our medical resources to keeping the old guys erect, but we're putting people in jail for smoking something that grows in the dirt. You know, we have more prescription drugs now. Every commercial on TV is a prescription drug ad. I can't watch TV for 4 minutes without thinking I have 5 serious diseases. Like, do you ever wake up tired in the mornings? Oh my God, I have this. Write this down. Whatever it is, I have it. Half the time, you don't even know what the commercial is. There's people running through fields or flying kites or swimming in the ocean. Like, that is the greatest disease ever. How do you get that? That disease comes with a hot chick and a puppy. The schools, now it's all about self-esteem in the schools. Build the kids' self-esteem. Make them feel good about themselves. If everybody grows up with high self-esteem, who's going to dance in our strip clubs? What's going to happen to our porno industry? These women don't just grow on trees. It takes lots of drunk daddies missing a lot of dance recitals before you decide to blow a goat on the internet for $50. And if that disappears, where does that leave me on a Friday with my new high-speed connection? All the time. You keep hearing about these terrorist masterminds that are being killed over in the Middle East. Terrorist masterminds. Masterminds, sort of a lofty way to describe what these guys do, don't you think? They're not masterminds.
Okay, you take bomb, right? And you put in backpack, then you get on the bus and you blow yourself up.
Why do I have to blow myself up? Why don't I put...
Who's the f***ing mastermind here, me or you?
Americans, let's face it, we've been a spoiled country for a long time. You know what the number one health risk in America is? Obesity. Obesity. They say we're in the middle of an obesity epidemic. An epidemic like it's polio. Like we'll be telling our grandkids about it one day. The great obesity epidemic of 2004. How'd you get through it, Grandpa?
Oh, it was horrible, Johnny. There was cheesecake and pork chops everywhere.
Nobody knows why we're getting fatter. Look at our lifestyles. I'll sit at a drive-thru. I'll sit there behind 15 other cars instead of getting up and making an 8-foot walk to the totally empty counter. Everything's mega meal, super size. Want biggie fries with that? Want a jumbo fry? Want to go large? Want a biggie fry? Want a 30 burgers for a nickel? You fat motherfucker, there's room in the bag. Take it. Want a 55-gallon drum of Coke with that? It's only 3 more cents. Sometimes you gotta suffer a little in your youth to motivate you to succeed later in life. You think if Bill Gates got laid in high school, do you think there'd be a Microsoft? Of course not. You gotta spend a lot of time stuffed in your own locker with your underwear wedged up your ass before you start thinking, I'm gonna take over the world with computers, you'll see, I'll show them. We're in one of the richest countries in the world, and the minimum wage is lower now than it was 35 years ago. There are homeless people everywhere. This homeless guy asked me for money the other day. I was about to give it to him, and I thought he's just gonna use it on drugs or alcohol. And then I thought, that's what I'm gonna use it on. Why am I judging this poor bastard? People love to judge homeless guys. Like, you give him the money, he's just gonna waste it. He's gonna waste the money. Well, he lives in a box. What do you want him to do with it? Save it up and buy a wall unit? Take a little run to the store for a throw rug and a CD rack? He's homeless. I walked behind this guy the other day. A homeless guy asked him for money. He looks right at the homeless guy. He goes, why don't you go out and get a job, you bum? People always say that to homeless guys. Get a job. Like, it's always that easy. This homeless guy was wearing his underwear outside his pants. I'm guessing his resume ain't all up to date. I'm predicting some problems during the interview process. I'm pretty sure even McDonald's has an underwear go inside the pants policy. Not that they enforce it very strictly, but technically, I'm sure it's on the books.
Covering up to the roof line. I remember I had to climb out to the window and go to the garage and get some shovels and shovel a path to the front door
to reveal the front door. It was completely encased in snow.
And then we'd have to deal with black ice. The blackest, 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 the blackest of ice. Oh, it's no, no, very nice ice. The school system in Montana never closed for bad weather, never once, and didn't understand. So you'd see tons of cars moving at 2 miles per hour with a blizzard. It was really weird. But you would see lots of kids in the classroom, approximately 2/3 or so, because 1/3 of them were transplants from another area and they didn't know how to handle the weather either. And that's how it went. The hallways were dripping with water, very moist, yes. All the people were nice, but not the boys. They would take snowballs and put rocks and pebbles inside and throw them at your ass. Then I moved to a little place called the Big Apple, Big Apple, oh yeah, yeah. I lived on 3rd and C with a very good bunch of company. Yes, a playwright, and an editor, and a playwright. It was a 7th floor walk up, walk up, walk up, walk up.
Fuck that shit.
It was very far away from any public transportation, and that also really sucked. I didn't make enough. Take a cab, so I was walking a lot. I had to plan ahead to figure out if there was going to be any delay beyond the walk that I'd have to do. You see, I'm a kind of person that likes to wait to the last minute to do anything. It really fucks you up when you're not really close to transportation and shit. You know what I'm saying? But then I had the chance to move to Brooklyn, Brooklyn Heights. Brooklyn, Brooklyn, Brooklyn Heights, yes. Bad idea. Oh yes, there's the promenade. Oh yes, there's beautiful brownstones. But then you have to deal with the stupid ass college kids with their stupid cigarettes and their attitudes. But most of all, McLaren strollers. McLaren strollers with ethnic nannies, ethnic nannies, ethnic nannies, white babies, McLaren strollers, ethnic nannies. I thought I was going to die of boredom. Oh, I'm sure it's fine if you need a McLaren stroller and a nanny, but to me, that's not
a very good time.
So I dreamt of moving to a place of cliches, a circus assortment of human frames, people who knew the meaning of irony, 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 irony. I moved to the Williamsburg, the pretty, 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 pretty Williamsburg, moved to 3rd and White, right next to a wonderful diner called Relish, Relish, Relish. Nice, lovely people that work inside of Relish, Relish, I relish, I relish, I relish, relish, best burger in town, one of them, yeah. I lived with a guy who was super smart. He was super smart. He started an internet company with some friends. Made a lot of money. He was enterprising. His brain was go, 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 go. We did a lot of little projects. Video and otherwise. We had a good time. We had a fellowship of the druggish kind. Yeah, I love living by the L. Arguably, the best train as long as you live off Bedford stop. Yeah. 'Cause it's just a straight shot across town, and that's always the shittiest part of Manhattan. To get from one side to the other, up and down's not so bad. I liked the shape and the attitude of the people, 'cause it was very funny that we all acted like we couldn't see each other, but really we were checking the various forms of jewelry and clothing that we were wearing, and the various unkempt states of presenting oneself, so that it looks as though you probably don't have a job. And that is part of the look, because it makes you feel as though you're filtering people that you do not want to deal with on a day-to-day basis. It's a protectionist reaction. Yeah. So if you have a problem with people that identify themselves as hipsters, well, it's just a classification that likes to insulate itself so that it's not infiltrated, even though they're infiltrating themselves by making facsimiles and copies of themselves within their own population. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But I love all the little variations, the people that live in the various areas, 'cause when you need help, people in New York are surprisingly helpful. They forget all the costumes that they're wearing, and they just get to the matter and pragmatically solve it so that they can move on throughout the day. Oh yes, that's living in New York City. That's living in New York. Now I don't live anywhere I haven't since that place I lived with the internet guy went away in March. I've been on airplane, then another airplane, then an airplane, another airplane, continent, airplane, another continent, airplane, another country, airplane, airplane, here's an airport. I have a preference of airport, that's a lot of flying. I thought that I was dying. I didn't know where home was. I still don't really know, but I planned it so I'd be here for a month and a half at least. So now I feel like I live here. Yes, I feel like I live here. I think that someday a place will fall from the sky. I know it takes work and stuff, but you know, when sometimes you're a guy and you don't have a lot of patience and you just can't figure out how it is to talk to a broker or look in the paper and actually do the footwork to look at spaces and things like that, because since I've lived in New York, people have just said, hey, why don't you live here, and it's worked like that, so I'm used to that form of reality accommodating in that way, so I guess it forms a type of laziness, but I'm rather productive in a creative way, so I kind of rationalize my lack of behavior to be kind of initiative in that kind of a way, you know, towards finding a living space. That's what we do. It's part of the rat race. That's what we do. That's what we do. But then there's Facebook. You can ask anyone on the first book. Do you have a little place? Do you have a little place that I can stay at? And sure enough, the singer from Thievery Corporation, I don't even know her very well. She said that she was going on vacation, and I could stay at a place just off the gram stall. A really wonderful location if you like White Castle. If you like White Castle, the castle of whiteness. Her place is lovely, I rather like it. She lives like I'd like to live, but I got so used to not paying rent for the last 4 years of my life. It's hard for me to rationalize that. Instead, I buy an iPhone and an extra computer, yes, and some gadgets, a camera that has a 12 times optical lens, but still relatively inexpensive, but with stereo microphones embedded, so it's a small version of a high-quality instrument that you would normally pay for.
I like to take vacations. I like to stay in places that are really strange. And if my friend says, I'm in Berlin, would you like to join me? I say, okay, because I'm not paying rent. I have enough money to have an airfare over there. Maybe I could get a gig. So I ask my manager, and she says, well, I don't really know that market very well, but I'll see what I can do. She doesn't give me a gig, but that's okay, because she got me this gig, and this is a pretty cool gig. It's got me, you see all this stuff that's on display. But I say, life is pretty good. Life is pretty great. You know what I'm saying? Life is pretty awesome. Like, for instance, this is my last example. Here we go. I hurt my back 4 years, 4 days ago. Same notes, shorter. 4 days ago, yeah. It hurt real bad. I could barely walk. It was my lower back. I don't know what the fuck was going on. I never experienced anything like that before. Oh, no, no, yes. But then the next day, a friend of mine, she's a photographer, and she's really cool, but I rarely get to see her because she's really busy, and that's what happens in New York. People that you want to hang out with, you never get to because they're always busy doing other projects and shit. You know how that works. Yes, I think you do. Yes, you do. Oh, yes, it's true. Yes. So here it goes. Scooby-shooby-doo. Yeah. So she gave me a present backstage after the first night of filming. It was a little tiny box with a lot of stickers and rainbow stickery other things that are stickery and stickish that kind of presented and became festooned with a kind of a logic that was very celebratory in a mild way. And then I took off that stuff and I opened the box and there were three Vicodin sewn across their middles inside of a jewelry stuff that fit perfectly to match the dimensions of that box. How wonderful is that? I don't even really know her that well, but she reached out and gave me something that made me feel rather swell. Oh yes, it's a wonderful life, yes. Oh, a wonderful life. I didn't think so. That was many days ago. I said, why is this happening before I'm filming? And then someone gave me some ibuprofen. And ibuprofen is closely related to aspirin, but I didn't know that. And I'm deathly allergic to aspirin, so I had a huge allergic reaction. And I had to counteract it by physically chewing on Benadryl pills. And just before I thought I was going to go to the hospital, I said, you know what? I think I might be okay. And then I went on stage and performed, and weird shit happened. But that is life. What does the future behold? The future? I don't know, guys. But we're all in it together. We can make the future stronger, or we can make the future weaker. Either way, the future's out there. And depending on the choices that you make, you can steer yourself towards the correct reality, although the other reality will continue to exist as well if you want to shift into it. But in order to gain the awareness to shift into that reality, well, that requires a lot of energy. And I don't really have that kind of energy, so I generally tend to listen to the intuitive side of myself, which hopefully guides me to the right place, but not always, obviously, because relationships are a very difficult thing for me to maintain. But what I'm trying to tell you is that I have friends, and friends, above all relationships, are incredibly important. And if you have a friend, remember to always love your friend, because that friend's going to be there besides the sexuality, and that's incredibly important. Because, you see, in the end, we lose our sexuality to a certain degree, and we need to kind of just realize that we're actually just kind of weird organizations of molecules that kind of conform to an atmosphere content that is a self-awareness unit that is part of a larger collective. And that's like one of those things where you're like, oh my God, whatever, you know, but nonetheless, that's probably how it is. So listen, before I go, I'd like to say this to you. Thank you, sir. Thank you. We're all geniuses. Let's go out and destroy the world!
Bugle of Ellen Charge. watching closely, Dean. Catch that train. Meet a soldier called Shane. Get off that train. Get back on it again. Avoid that rain. Buy some flowers for Elaine. Bye. Thanks for listening. Come on. Switch it off. Go to bed. Unless it's the daytime, in which case, get on with your jobs.
Well, I'm a simple bloke, the things I like are few and far between. I love my wife and I love my kids, and on my truck I'm equally as keen. I don't talk dirty on the CB, and I don't chat up waitresses in cafes. I just pull up, have a rest and another cup of coffee. One day not so long ago, pulled into the yard to unload. I thought to myself, it's getting a bit nippy, better put me coat on so I don't catch a cold. Now I like a drop of beer, but there's some advice for you. Don't drink and drive. Pull up, have a drink and stay in the cab for the night. When I reached the outskirts of town, a strange thought crossed my mind. What if I get home to find the wife and kids have died? Well, I laughed a bit, you know, as if this sort of thing could ever happen to me. I pulled up round the corner of my house, came in through the back way. No one around. Disappointing to find my tea wasn't ready. There was a knock on the door. It was Dave from over the road. Bad news, I'm afraid, Ted. Your dog's dead. The thing that's so sad is he was knocked over by a drunken truck driver. I've been walked by your wife and kids, I'm afraid, Ted. Well, it wasn't my day, fresh out of luck. but at least I've still got me truck. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a £5 note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are, you are, you are. What a beautiful pussy you are. The Owl's Diary, Day 1. I am having problems relating to my crew member, having never been a great fan of cats, nor they of birds. Why have we been press-ganged into service together? What can they hope to achieve by sending this absurd duo out to sea? I am an owl. The cat is a cat. We are not sailors, neither of us. Who sewed our tiny blue uniforms? Who fashioned my owl-sized beret? Who dressed us as miniature mariners? Who shamed us in this way? Initially, I was uncomfortable in the extreme with this situation. The cat is, of course, my natural predator, and were it to attack me whilst I sleep, things could go either way. My owl talons might match its claws in a fair fight, deep in the woodland, high on a city rooftop, or in the back room of some cockney boozer. But I am in a weakened state, barely recovered from the night they trapped me with puppet mice and then took out toffee hammers and broke all the bones in my wings, one by one, and battered me into unconsciousness. Me, the owl, he who is supposed to be so wise, played for a fool by sods. To distract me from my pain, I have been given a small guitar, which I suppose would be some consolation if I had any fingers. Luckily, the pussycat is terrified of water, which now surrounds us in great quantities. Much as it has an instinctive hostility towards me, its suspicion of the sea is far greater. My heart goes out to it, the tiny trembling thing. I have tried to allay its fears, but it is a cat. I am an owl, and we do not share a common language. My limited range of gestures, flapping my wings, screeching, trying to play my small guitar, and spinning my head through 360 degrees, is proving inadequate. If only I could quit this doomed voyage. If only I could fly away. But I can't. Today at noon we saw on the far horizon another pea-green boat, identical to ours in every respect, but crewed by a Jack Russell Terrier and a rabbit. It seems inappropriate nautical pairings are the very button of fashion. The dog sees the rabbit. The end is in sight. The sun is setting. The cat has said nothing so far, but I think it likes me. Must try to sleep. Need sleep. Ah. Day 2. I became afflicted with a great hunger this morning and resolved to find some provisions. To my horror, it appears that all we have been issued with is honey in a jar. This presents problems, as neither the cat nor I have opposable thumbs, although somehow I am able to play the small guitar and write this. It seems this voyage has been very badly planned indeed. We are at sea, without map or compass, with no knowledge of why we were set upon the waves, and no fixed destination in mind. We share nothing but suspicious glances,
and we have nothing to eat but honey, beloved only by babies and by bees. And, wrapping a bundle of coppers, we have a £5 note. I can only assume those that set us on our way were Englishmen. It would be typical of their isolationist arrogance to assume their currency will be acceptable worldwide. Once I could have fluttered up off the deck, spread my wings and raked fish out of the waves for the cat and I to feast upon. But my feathers flutter ineffectually on my shattered limbs, and I hold out little hope for our survival. A shame. I've nearly learned how to play the E minor chord. Today at noon we saw on the far horizon another pea green boat, identical to ours in every respect, but crewed by a spider and a fly. Their web sail is proving spectacularly ineffectual. Perhaps if the fly didn't struggle so, they might make more headway. Today when I approached it, the cat hissed at me and raised its hackles. But I feel we are making real progress. Must sleep. Need sleep. Day 3. During the night, while I lay sleeping, the cat has somehow opened the jar. I suspect it may be keeping things from me. Information. Utensils. Some kind of jar opener. And the depth of its true feelings. I sympathize. It is difficult to communicate emotions at the best of times, but these are impossible circumstances. Perhaps if we had a chaperone, things might be different. We could pass love notes and pressed flowers between one another, and gradually our relationship might blossom. As it is, I am left to try and interpret the most basic of gestures. The cat retches. Is this evidence of butterflies in the stomach, of a mounting erotic desire, of the first exhilarating pangs of love, or simply a furball? It is too soon to say. As for our daily rations, well, the cat can put its little paw into the jar and scoop the honey out of the jar, of course, but I am an owl. And on the front of my head, I have the large, flat face of an owl. This will not fit into a jar. I try to peck honey off the cat's feet. It scratches my eye out, but the stinging of the salt wind burns away the pain, and the greatest romances of history and literature are often characterized by periodic bouts of violence. I try to calm the cat down by singing a soothing song on the small guitar. Oh lovely pussy, oh pussy my love. But it was difficult to find the right chords with only one eye and no hands. Also, I cannot actually speak. I think I have made the situation worse. Maybe if the guitar wasn't so small, it might be easier to play. Later, I tried to scoop the honey out of the jar using my wing and lick it off. But I ended up with feathers stuck all round my face and looked as if I had attacked a small bird. Today at noon, we saw on the far horizon another pea-green boat, identical to ours, but crewed by an elephant and a mouse. It is sinking, obviously. The elephant holds a sailor's hat in its trunk where, in happier times, tasty peanuts and juicy buns were clasped, and waves it at me forlornly as it slips beneath the waves. The mouse, in turn, makes only obscene gestures towards me as it drowns, on behalf of the hundreds of its kind I have slaughtered and eaten. I feel a little ashamed, but what can I say? I was hungry, and probably drunk as usual. Must sleep. Pussy said to the owl, "You elegant fowl, how charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us be married. Too long we have tarried, but what shall we do for a ring? And they sailed away for a year and a day to the land where the bong tree grows. And there in a wood a piggy wig stood with a ring at the end of his nose, his nose, his nose, with a ring at the end of his nose. The Owl's Diary, Day 47. The cat has eaten all the honey. Surely we will die here. A pity. I had nearly learned the chords for Mull of Kintyre by Sir Paul McCartney's Wings. A simple song which nevertheless once stirred the race memory of millions. Oh, I forget, did I ever tell you the cat has started speaking to me? You wouldn't understand what the cat says if you were to hear it. To you, its eulogies would just seem like the desperate mewling and the listless, tortured breathing of an animal in pain. To you, the sounds the cat makes would indicate simply that it was dying, slowly, of exposure and thirst, here at sea, miles from land, our useless honey long gone, our £5 note predictably irrelevant in this retail-free environment. But to me, the tiny variations in the pitch and tone of the cat's death rattle form coded messages. Can you hear? The cat says that I am an elegant fowl. The cat says I sing sweetly, charmingly even. The cat says it wants to marry me. The cat says it cannot wait. It cannot wait for me, the owl. The cat's feelings are not so hard to fathom. It seems to me the cat and I have much in common. We both eat mice, and at present neither of us can fly. There are probably some other things too, but I can't think of them at the moment. I knew the cat would succumb to my charms eventually. It's lucky I didn't show my hand too soon. Play it cool. My father, the owl, always told me, let them come to you, the coquettish sluts. Today on the far horizon, a red squirrel and a grey squirrel sailed past us in another pea-green boat. I doubt their voyage will end well. Day 159. As an owl, I am privileged to be able to tell what I have recently eaten by examining my owl pellets, which now litter the boat from prow to stern. To pass the time, I do so. It appears I once ate some honey and some feathers, and then nothing for the best part of 5 months. It occurs to me that this diary is somewhat superfluous. When we finally drift ashore, dead, all anyone needs to know of our adventure will be contained in my droppings, which will read like a diary of my deterioration. That which began in honey ends in despair. The same is true of life generally. Did I tell you the cat speaks to me? It speaks to me, the owl. It says it wants to marry me, but it has anxieties as to how we will sanctify our union, as we have no ring, which is predictable. And, as we are of different species, we could never mate. Thus, the symbolism of the ring, binding us together, becomes all important. It's all we have. Everything must be done with the utmost decorum. To me, of course, marriage is an irrelevance, a foolish institution from a bygone age. But one can understand the cat's need for some kind of formality, to make it feel confident in the seriousness of my intentions. Also, once we are married, in the event of my death, the cat will inherit all my worldly goods. My guitar, my droppings and so forth, which will help sustain it until it finds another lover. This it could do with my blessing, for I am wise, generous and fair, and from beyond the grave I would bestow only my blessing upon whatsoever creature should take it upon itself to quench the insatiable lusts of my beloved and bereaved cat. Time passes, the cat speaks to me, and so do the gulls, mocking me as they fly, and the waves and the creaking timbers of the pea-green boat. They tell me I must live, must live, must try to live. Today, at noon, we saw on the far horizon another pea-green boat, identical to ours in every respect, but empty, its ill-matched animal crew presumably having lost heart and cast themselves into the sea. A birdcage rocks abandoned on the deck. A tiny mirror swings. A cuttlefish shell rattles. Must sleep. Must try. Day 366. Some time ago now, the cat proved its love for me. Its love for me, the owl. It gave me its heart. Take my heart, it said, I think. And so I did. There is an island up ahead. A bong tree grows there. Just the one, though. And there's a pig. In a wood. Look, cat, look, the bong tree, the wood, the pig. Can you see them? Now we can make our vows. Dear pig, are you willing to sell for 1 shilling your ring? Said the piggy, I will. So they took it away and were married next day by the turkey who lives on the hill. They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a runcible spoon. And hand in hand, on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon. The moon, the moon. They danced by the light of the moon.
The Turkey's Diary, Day 9012. There was an owl here in Bong Tree Land today. It seemed distressed. You'll recall the pig who lives in the wood. I've written to you of him before. Apparently there was some altercation this morning. An owl arrived in the pig's clearing, gaunt and wild-eyed, with something in a bag, something fetid, some kind of carcass. The owl wrenched the ring from the pig's nose and ran off, and you know how much the pig liked that ring. The pig liked that ring very much indeed. Later on, the owl arrived at the hill where I, the turkey, live. It threatened me with the neck of a broken guitar and insisted I wet it to the rotten contents of the bag. I held my nose and looked in, but the wreckage inside was indistinct. I can pay you, the owl said, £5. It has been a dreadful winter here in Bong Tree Land, as you know, and against my better judgment, I accepted the owl's offer. Needless to say, it was a travesty of the wedding ceremony. One of the celebrants was dead, the other deranged, and I am not an ordained minister. I am a turkey. After the service, such as it was, I watched the owl stumble down the hill a little, slashing repeatedly at the bag's contents with its talons as it went, until whatever had been inside was reduced to scraps of shredded carrion. Then it emptied pieces of fruit into the bag and raised it above its head, shaking it vigorously. When the owl had finished this strange procedure, it sat down amidst the daisies and slowly and with great solemnity took out a spoon and ate as much of the bag's grisly mixture as it could. Later, as evening fell, the owl stood and hurried to the beach. The moon rose. Me, I sat on a branch and watched the owl spin round in circles, swinging the carcass bag over its head once more, before falling to the ground and weeping. I thought I heard it whispering to itself, but with the background of the waves, I cannot be sure what was said or whom the poor creature imagined it was addressing. That which began in honey ends in despair, the owl appeared to cry over the gentle rush of the encroaching tide. Then the waves covered it, and it was seen.